From WXXI News, this is Education Friday on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last month in Irondequoit. Now, in May, the West Irondequoit school budget received 56% support from voters. But because the district was attempting to override the property tax cap, they needed 60%. So technically, the budget failed, and West Irondequoit had one more chance to put a budget in front of voters. That would happen in June. The district decided to offer the same budget. Turnout doubled, but the number was nearly the same in terms of support, this time roughly 55% support, not enough to pass the budget. And that means the district is now forced into some very difficult choices. This week, we've learned what those choices include. Some voters predicted that the district was just bluffing, that they wouldn't really cut sports or arts or teaching jobs. Others worried that the cuts could hurt students. This hour, we're glad to welcome West Irondequoit Superintendent Jeff Crane to the studio to explain and to answer your questions about this. Jeff, nice to see you again.
Thanks, Evan, for having me on. I appreciate it.
Before we get to exactly what you've decided to do and how this is going to all play out, let's make sure that we lay out what got us here. The first budget vote in May. How many school districts in our state that you're aware of attempted to override the property tax cap?
Well, don't hold me to these numbers.
Yeah,
I think basically about 20 school district attempts out of 700 tried to override this, the tax cap. I believe about 8 of them had to go out for a second vote because they did not successfully get the 60%. And now there are 2 left. One school district down in Rockland County is going to get another vote because they had problems with their voting machines. So we may end up being the only district in the state that is in a contingency budget because of these variables.
And let's make sure we explain exactly what the property tax cap is and how it impacts a district's decision on what to put in front of voters.
Well, that's that's
your
probably
favorite subject.
It's probably the most confusing because people have asked, well, wait a minute, it's supposed to be 2%. And last year, our tax levy formula cap, which is what it is accurately described yet, was 3.79, and we stayed within the tax cap, and we passed the budget by well more than the simple majority. But this year, because the formula starts at 2.0 or wherever the consumer price index is, which was 1.46 this year, you start lower. We're a fully developed town, so we received no benefit onto that number. And the pension plan for the statewide teachers organization and all education pension plan only, in quotes, went up slightly. Last year, because the pension costs went up by double digits, we received exemptions. And that's why our 2.0 tax cap was 3.79. This year, we received none of those benefits. So we had to meet a 1.28% tax cap this year. I don't know if that explains what you were hoping for,
That's
a start.
So your number would have been, you could not go above 1.28 without a supermajority from voters.
That's correct. And to meet that tax cap, we would have had to cut two-thirds of what we're currently cutting. We would have had to cut $960,000 worth of programming and some of the things you see listed on our website now prior to the May 20th vote. And the board and our administrative team felt that that was a community decision to make on May 20th. And as you know, although we passed the Promise Project, which is a very exciting part of what's going on in our district, by 61%, as you mentioned, we were able to get 56% on the budget. So we had to go out.
Are you shocked to potentially be the only district in the state in this position?
I'm disappointed in some things. I'm very pleased with other things. We have predicted this. We have tried to teach for years. We've had on the back of our snapshot, which we developed for realtors to hand out so that people can see what could bring them into houses in West Irondequoit from the school district. We've had a petition for 2 years, addresses for the governor and our legislators. Please restore our gap elimination adjustment. We've been predicting that we would get to this point now for about 4 or 5 years, Evan, and we've been using every strategy that we could use to avoid this point. But just like Brighton and West Irondequoit this year, we have finally gotten to the point where you either have to go to your taxpayer or you have to make $960,000 worth of cuts. So that's a position that Brighton and West Irondequoit were in this year. Brighton, of course, got, I think, 70, 71% on their vote. We received 56 and 55.
Okay, so Brighton's budget passed with the supermajority, the so-called supermajority. Mm-hmm. West Irondequoit did not. But you're, what you're saying is, if you're if you're correct, Jeff, we're going to see one or two or three or five more local districts do the exact same thing that you and Brighton did next year or the year after.
If the outside variables don't change, then more and more school districts are going to be finding themselves in our situation. Now, we were first because we used different strategies than other districts. We kept class sizes low. We kept as much staff as we could. We used attrition and enrollment decreases to decrease staff and administration. Other districts did some major cutting two or three years ago of staffing. And so now those districts are starting to do what we did, and they're using their reserves to cover the difference. But again, you can only spend so much on your reserves before you start to compromise the fiscal integrity of the district, and many of us are very careful about that.
Okay. For our listeners, if you want to join the conversation, it's toll-free, 844-295-TALK, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI, 263-9994 in Rochester. You can also tweet at the show, tweet at Evan Dawson, and we can get to your comments online as well. We already see some coming in, and we're going to be getting to those in a minute. But we want to continue with Jeff Crane and make sure we understand now what has happened. So you had to make a decision after May. You did not get 60% in May. You could have gone back with any other budget you wanted a month later, and you chose the exact same one. And there, as you know, there were plenty of voters who said that was arrogant. That was there's plenty of people who understood, but there's plenty of people who said it's arrogant for you to go back to the taxpayers when they already didn't give you enough support to pass the first one. Mm-hmm. So why did you put the exact same budget out twice?
Well, there's two main reasons. Number one, the Board of Education and our administrative team and I have for now 10 years. Each and every year of my superintendency, I'm in my 11th year, we have said to in every budget presentation, if the number indicates complacency at any time, for instance, in May we had 3,000 voters, and the budget doesn't go forward for that reason, we will give the community another chance at exactly the same budget because we present the budget in an open, transparent way that is what we need to continue the program as it was currently during those months. So for those people who were surprised at that decision, I think that they probably have not heard us over these past 10 years say that that is a strategy that our board and our administrative team believed in, because otherwise, what would have happened if we did what some of those folks refer to as a less than arrogant decision? Here's what would have happened. We would have come back out and said, okay, we can't cut $960,000 because we're not going to get a positive vote to do that. So let's say we cut half of that. Let's say we cut $400,000 from a budget that we've been saying for 2 months is a fair, comprehensive budget with no excess in it. The first thing's going to be, well, then you've not been telling us the truth.
You were crying wolf.
Yeah, you've not been telling us the truth for 2 months. That's number one.
Yep.
Number two, the very next thing you're going to hear is, so if you cut $400,000, why didn't you cut $500,000? Because it's never enough. And the third thing you're going to hear is, next year I'm going to make sure I vote that first budget down because obviously they're not giving us the accurate information. So I understand people's feelings about arrogance, but for me, for our board, we acted with integrity, not to mention the second most important variable. A majority of the people voting that day approved that plan. 56%, and the board, with very little discussion that night, and I decided we must honor the 56%.
You don't like hearing the media say that the budget failed.
I don't, because I really feel strongly about this, and I know that it was signed into law. I know that we're going to have to deal with it, but I'm not going to stop. And I've joked. I offered to take folks with me to Albany to advocate for review of this law, because a 45% minority is making a high performing, quality district go through these kinds of things. That in America, in my opinion, is not right. We need to review it, and we need to see if there's some adjustments that can be made to allow for what commonly occurs across the board in our country, majority rules. And so honoring the majority was very important to our board and to our administrative team.
All right. So what Jeff is essentially saying is if you put a budget out the first time and you say this is the best we can do, and then you got to go back a second time, and you can quote unquote do better for the taxpayer, you are admitting in that way that you were either lying or you were dishonest the first time.
Exactly. And okay. I would rather, if I have to be called something, I'd rather be able to look in the mirror and know that we acted with integrity and be called arrogant than the other.
Okay. So here you are now, 55% not enough, and you've got to make what kind of cut? So what's the number that you had to cut?
We had to get to $1.462 million.
Okay. And going into the process, a lot of people wondered, behind closed doors, did you have a plan for that $1.46 million if you had to do it? Even before May, did you know what it would have been?
Well, what you need to know is in my job, my job is planning for worst-case scenarios.
Yeah, yeah.
So for years and years, whether it was with the Superintendent's Development Program that I taught out of Oswego or with our own administrative team looking at worst-case scenario planning, of course we've talked about this. Of course we've prioritized. Of course we've looked at how do we reduce as far away from the kids as possible. And, of course, you look at any of the reductions, and directly or indirectly, they're going to affect kids over time. But as far away from kids directly as possible for as much of it as we can. And that's why we ended up last Tuesday night with the last most difficult, most painful $175,000 of cuts, because we could not, having cut staff across the board, having done all the other things, there was nothing left to do.
All right, so $1.46 million was the number you had to get to, and I was going to ask you how you strategize or prioritize it. What you're telling me is, number one, keep it away from the kids as much as possible. And so let's kind of go down some of the list here. And I see the phone starting to ring, and we're going to get there in a second. What's the biggest number that you cut? What's the biggest cut?
Let's take it at about $1.5 million. Let's round it up.
Okay.
And say we immediately had to do something really that directly affects kids. On May 21st, we had to stop our enrollment-based interviewing of new teachers, because we didn't know what would happen June 17th and whether we would have the money to hire the enrollment-based teachers that we're seeing. Our enrollment is on a rebound. Most districts are still on the downside, but ours is going up K-6. So we were looking to hire 6 teachers. We had to stop that interview process, which means we automatically have larger class sizes than our district is comfortable with. So that's a direct effect on kids right there. We also had to talk, we had to figure out possible cuts and seniority domino effects to the youngest teachers, so that we would get to those teachers and say, look, we hope June 17th is better than what could happen. But if it doesn't, we need to get you in the job market right away. We need to help you find a place, and we will do that. So that was sort of the immediate effect of the May 20th vote. Then you have to follow the rules around mandated and non-mandated subjects, opportunities. So there are certain things that we had no choice on, as far as, you know, non-emergency equipment purchases. We had to stop a capital project that's part of the operating budget. So we had $100,000 in to do some masonry work at our middle schools that we can't do under contingency rules. And one of the things that is most devastating to our community, because we talk about community schools so much, our community is always using our buildings, is that we are prohibited from subsidizing the use of our buildings by outside groups at any rate. Last year was the first year we ever charged, and we charged about 30%, and that was tough on some of our outside groups. And under a contingency budget, we have to charge 100%, and there's not many outside groups. You know, our Vikings football group, our IAA basketball, they can't afford that kind of thing. So they're forced to look elsewhere to continue their process.
You're charging them to use the facility.
We are.
How much?
We are directed to charge them 100% for the use of the facility. It's hundreds of dollars, Evan. It's not $30 like it used to be. It's security, it's custodial, it's cleaning,
but
it's lights.
And forgive me, I want to make sure I understand this. If it used to be $30 and now it's hundreds of dollars and they end up leaving and not using your facility, then you're actually getting less revenue, aren't you?
Well,
revenue's the wrong word, but yeah.
We started to charge for the first time this year because we saw this coming and we needed revenue.
Yeah, okay.
So we just said, folks, we've got to have some help. You've got to pay for some part of this.
Yep.
And we thought that maybe we could make it through. The contingency budget directs us that we cannot subsidize outside groups in any way. That's the reason that these groups are in trouble using our facilities. And it's hurtful because we look at our schools as community schools.
Again, we're going to get to the – if you're on the phone waiting to talk to Jeff Crane, West Irondequoit Superintendent, we'll get you in just a moment. But let's make sure that we understand that. So about $1.5 million, you talk about those six teaching positions, those hires that were not made, right?
Right, and then we had to let another 12 faculty and staff members go across the board.
So that's roughly 16, 17, 18 yeah. positions that you'd – would like to have and you think you need to have next year that you will not have?
Well, we did need to have them. We have cut some electives that will be some of those reductions. Remember, in teaching, there might be a 0.4 out of a 1.0 position reduction. There might be a 1.0 full-time employee reduction. So these are a combination of reductions and layoffs.
Okay. And then you talked about the fees for the outside groups. What else? What about sports?
Well, as you could, if you were looking at our website, where we tried to keep people updated as to what we were doing and when, you will see that on June 28th, we had to make the decision to suspend activities. I'd rather say it this way. Suspend activities at the Helmer Nature Center. A very painful decision. Our kids have... for years, 40 years now, enjoyed that wonderful decision made by futuristic educators 40 years ago. We are working to understand how we can keep some, we believe we are able to keep the animals safe and sound, and we have some caretaking going on using a fund balance for a short period of time for the Helmer Nature Center as we try to look at other solutions. But that was a decision that was a $111,000 decision that we made in June. And then, of course, July 8th was our Tuesday night meeting where we had to finally decide that field trips at $55,000 would be suspended for a year. The really, really tough one because it so affects so many kids at such an early grade level and developmentally as 7th and 8th grade sports. We have a multitude of activities that kids do and are involved in. It is so good for them, not only physically but mentally developmentally.
7th and 8th, all sports?
All modified B sports. Those are 7th and 8th grade sports, and that's about a $95,000 expense.
What sports are those? Give me examples.
We have almost all of them. Okay. You name it, we offer it to kids, and they participate at high rates. So that is something that was a very difficult decision. We had to change our policy around Student Council Senior Citizen Fun Night, which started out as Senior Citizen Prom Night, and changed to Senior Citizen Fun Night, where the Board of Education has subsidized the dinners for that at about $2,300. Under a contingency budget, either Student Council has to pay for that totally, or at the high school, or we have to charge tickets at about $10 per person for the dinner that goes along with that if people want to attend. So there's another outside group subsidy that we had to hit. And the other piece was we wanted to try and save opportunities that kids couldn't get elsewhere at the expense of opportunities that they might get elsewhere. All bad choices, don't get me wrong. I understand that no choice we made was going to be accepted by everybody, but we had all bad choices. So we kept the Dake musical and the IHS musical, but we lost the IHS fall drama and the IHS spring comedy for about $10,000. And finally, the principals in each of the buildings know that they have the seven of them have to come up with just under $12,000 of reductions in clubs, but we can't say what that's going to be because the principals need to be able to go into their buildings in September, October, gauge the concern, the interest of the clubs, and then distribute the money they have left appropriately. So that was the last most painful piece, and I know I saw a couple of moms walking out just could hardly talk because they were on their way home to talk to their seventh graders about the fact that here you thought this was going to be available to you at Dake, and now for a year it's not. And I certainly empathize. I wish that we weren't in that position.
Our guest for the hour is West Irondequoit Superintendent Jeff Crane. Let's get some phone calls in. I think this is Moran. Is that
correct?
Right?
Hello?
Go ahead.
Yeah, Superintendent, I wanted to ask you, what has been the history of percentage of budget passing in West Irondequoit, and how different the new process with the tax cap has affected the percentages of approval, or if it hasn't?
A great question, Marina. In my 10 years, we have passed a budget every year by somewhere between 56 and 70% majority rule. This is the first year that we attempted to override the tax break. So everyone in our district and everyone watching us is learning what these new rules are doing to us. And as a matter of fact, we've been somewhat behind in getting information to our residents because the people that we ask questions of have to ask questions elsewhere before they can give us answers because this is so new. Now, some rural schools in New York State have already been through this, but our situation is somewhat different. So I certainly expected a challenge to the percentage when we went out in May and in June, and disappointed that that it didn't turn out the way we hoped. But we did do something very significant. 6,000 plus people voted in the second attempt, mm-hmm. and the folks who called and found out and asked questions, many folks have found out more about public education funding and the limitations that we have to put up with in public education funding. And some had to say, Jeff, I still have to vote no. And those folks who called and asked questions and found out what they had to find out and said, I still have to vote no, I honor those votes. I honor our community for turning out at such a high level. So I hope I answered your question, but
yes,
ask again if you would.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Miranda. I appreciate that. Let's grab Bruce in West Irondequoit, I think. Is that right, Bruce?
That's where I'm from.
Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
First, I want to say agree in regards to the majority rule, that also agree that the state has cut back, you know, financing that we really are due. But I have to say I'm personally insulted that you, as a voter, that you think that I'm going to hold my breath till I'm blue to give me a new budget. If you were asked to go back to the drawing board the first time, you had a resounding, you know, there was a large gap there that you thought that you were just going to, you know, we'll just bring it back. If I went back to my boss with the same exact thing that he's already turned down, same exact thing would happen to you. Now, you could have gone back and made, you have to make drastic cuts now. You could have made less drastic cuts and come back and said, you know, we don't like this, but we heard you. This is the best we can do, and give that to us in an open, honest way, and we could have evaluated that. We're not children. We're not going to hold our breath to our blue so that you come back with a new budget. We've passed the budget with majorities going forward. We agree that West Irondequoit needs to be a great school district, but, you know, I just have to agree with those that say it was hubris to think that you're just going to, well, just not enough people turned out.
Bruce, thanks for the call. Let's let the superintendent respond. Go ahead.
Bruce, I'm not sure, but I think you may have emailed me in the past with similar comments, and I certainly do not ignore any comments through any process that we go through, including this one. And our board and our administrative team are certainly talking about your interpretation of what we did. Please know that in no way were we treating any of our residents as if they were children. We believe that we were upfront, honest, and transparent. And like I said before, it for us, it was almost automatic. It wasn't hubris. It was something that we had been talking about for 10 years. Because so many people in the past have said, I'm sorry, I forgot that I was supposed to vote that day, or I didn't make it. I had something else to do. I wish I had done that. So I will say to you, Bruce, I'm sorry that you feel that way. I and the Board of Education would never treat our residents that way. But we do believe that we acted with integrity.
To Bruce's point, and I'm not going to belabor the point because I think Jeff has made his point on why you go back with the second budget. It's certainly possible that you could say to the voters, our first budget was the best we could do, but the second budget we're going to put in front of you is going to include cutting beyond the fat, that there's no fat here, but we're still going to take a hit because what we don't want to see is 7th and 8th grade sports gone, that we'll take a hit with 18 teaching positions. We got to preserve sports, or we'll preserve those teaching positions. We'll give up sports. You could have done that.
Well, and here's the challenge with that one. If you don't cut $960,000 so that you can get a simple majority vote on the second budget, which the board had already decided had to be a community decision, then you still need a 60% supermajority for whatever it is you come back at. So there's another challenge for you that has to be considered. So you cut anything that's on this list and you lose. I've always said, don't make yes voters into no voters before you have to. And that's a delicate balance to maintain. And Bruce makes a great point as to why it's a delicate balance to maintain. And I hope he understands that that was not our intention at all.
Jane in Rochester. Go ahead, Jane.
Yes, I just understand very vaguely, but that we have another state surplus coming from, I believe it was a French bank that owes New York $2 billion. And why can't we have some of that money for emergency situations like this? It's a surplus, and education is in great need. Thank you.
Oh, Jane. Oh, Jane.
Go ahead, Jeff.
You have a place on my bus going to Albany, okay? Jane, you are talking about something that our Monroe County School Boards Association, our superintendents across the state have been talking about. You know, I think you're referring to, and I think Bruce even referred to it, the gap elimination adjustment. We've been trying to teach people about how devastating that has been. Governor Patterson started that as a one-year adjustment, taking money away from 700 school districts to pay the deficit for New York State. It was supposed to be a one-year thing. It's happened every year since then, and for West Irondequoit, we've lost over $13 or $14 million over that time, which is why we started this budget year $2 million in the hole, because the good news is the governor and the legislature restored $500,000 of the $2.5 million that we had lost for this year. The bad news is we still had a $2 million deficit. And you make a great point, Jane. If we have a $2 billion surplus that has been talked about for the past 6 months in the state budget, and now because of the lawsuit that you just mentioned, there's another additional billion plus, shouldn't school districts, 700 school districts that are $1 billion down from money promised them, be some portion of the recipients of that money? And let me just add this one thing. We started every budget presentation this year with this fact. If our gap elimination adjustment was restored in total this January, we would not have had to break the tax cap in the foreseeable future out through 2021. If we had had the money that was promised us, we would not be in this position. So, Jane, I'll call you, and you can come to Albany with me.
We're late for a break, and I see poor John Andrus, our engineer behind the glass, is handling ever more phone calls. But let's take the shortest break in radio, and we're going to come back, and we're going to address an important point here, which is that a lot of people might have thought, well, districts are bluffing, that they're not going to make hard cuts. What has the response been from the athletes, from the parents? Now that we've seen the cuts, when voters say no, we're going to hit that next with Jeff Crane. Stay with us. I'm Evan Dawson. Monday on The Next Connections, The Value of Failure. Economics writer Megan McArdle has collected some of the greatest stories of failure in business as a demonstration that most great success stories start out as flaming wreckages. And we'll hear from entrepreneurs who have built their businesses on the backs of their own previous failures. It's going to inspire all of us Monday on Connections.
Hundreds of thousands of veterans are on opiates for pain, but many are now saying no to these drugs.
My next month's supply comes next week, so as soon as they come in, I take those and I flush them. And then I just scrape my names off all the pill bottles and throw them all away.
Vets disobeying doctor's orders later today on All Things Considered from NPR News.
This afternoon at 4 on your NPR News station.
Welcome back to Connections. It's Education Friday. I'm Evan Dawson. West Irondequoit Superintendent Jeff Crane is here. And if you're just joining us, West Irondequoit could end up being the only district in this state to go to a contingency budget with voters essentially, we will say, rejecting a budget. Jeff's very sensitive about that, but not giving the supermajority necessary to pass a budget that exceeded the property tax cap. Roughly 3% of the school districts in the state tried to override the property tax cap, and West Irondequoit had two opportunities to do that. They had 56% the first time, 55% the second. You need 60%, a so-called supermajority, to do it. We'll get back to that subject later this hour with Jeff. Jeff has used the word undemocratic to talk about that. We're going to get back to that in a second. But let me hit an important point here, Jeff. You have a very delicate job, which is you have to handle the cuts the best you can and minimize the damage the best you can. But at the same time, when you tell voters before a budget, if you don't pass this, it's going to hurt. It has to hurt. And now they're losing 7th and 8th grade sports. Mm-hmm. They're losing teaching positions. They're losing field trips. That hurts to a lot of parents. What are you hearing from, for example, 7th and 8th grade athletes?
They can hardly look at me. I can hardly look at them. I'm sad for them. But let me back up and tell you what our priorities have to be. I've never in the 10 years I presented budgets, never have I said, oh, by the way, if a budget goes down, here are the kinds of things you're going to lose, because I knew that that wasn't the right way to present a budget.
You don't try to hold a gun to a voter's head.
Absolutely not. And I knew that people would feel threatened in a way that would not be intentional. However, right after Memorial Day, the first Tuesday of Memorial Day, I started doing little video clips that went out onto our website, trying to explain to people possible new reality. At that point, between the May and June vote, I felt, now you need to understand what this could mean. I didn't mean it to be threatening. I meant it to be instructional. I tried to be as upbeat about bad topics as I could, because I didn't want people to feel threatened, although I know some did. But I was trying to teach what the possible reality could do. And finally, in the last 3 or 4 days, I said, you're tired of this, so am I. Let's talk about some of the positive things that are happening here. Let's not forget this group of kids, that group of kids. And so to have to take a group of kids like 7th and 8th graders, here's why they ended up in this position from our decisions. Remember, all bad options. To maintain the academic excellence of the district is priority one. To maintain the fiscal integrity of the district is priority 1A, because without one, you can't have the other. To make sure that the cuts that we are forced now to make, not that we're choosing to make, have the minimal effect on the kids who are leaving our district, who don't have a chance to recover. So a non-mandated AP course for a senior might have made sense from a financial point of view, but that senior, that junior or senior taking that course, is not going to have time to recover from that cut. 7th and 8th grade sports, we have many opportunities in our community for kids to access something similar to those sports. That's not to say it's going to replace that program. Please don't get me wrong with that comment. But those 7th and 8th graders, if we are successful and we make this a one-year event and not what has happened in other districts, a 3 to 7 to 10 year trend, then they will have time to recover in their 8th grade and their varsity and JVs.
A year from now, will you put out a budget that will restore all of these cuts?
I can predict only one thing. I doubt very much that we'll put out a budget that's going to break the tax cap.
You won't try to break the tax cap again next
year? I didn't say that. I said I doubt that we'll be there, but we don't know how this contingency budget plays in the tax levy formula. Can we carry that money over? Does
right.
that give us a chance to have
so there's a lot
higher
you don't
than
know.
A 2.0?
There's a
we
lot you don't know.
We can't predict until January what the basis is.
But is there a chance that 7th and 8th grade sports are coming
Absolutely.
Back if the budget passes in a year?
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's the goal.
Now,
that's the goal.
I want to get back to the phones because there's a couple of interesting questions that we've already had from listeners online, and I think Kate has kind of a thread of that. This is Kate in Brighton asking about sports. Go ahead, Kate.
Hi. My daughter is a choral music teacher in Irondequoit, and I have tremendous respect for Jeff. But my question is, my grandson is going into eighth grade at Dake. He runs cross country and track. Would it be possible for the eighth grade athletes to join JV teams at the high school?
Kate, thank you for your comments. I appreciate that very much. And the answer is, as I've written to many folks who have asked this question, please have your grandchild, parents, et cetera, call Tony Lapani, our Director of Athletics, Physical Education, and Health, and he can give you the options that each sport allow for kids. Remember, modified A sports have not been cut. Modified A sports include 7th, 8th, and 9th graders. The only problem with modified A sports is that, Monroe County only offers competition in about half of the sports that we offer for modified B. So the kids who are in sports that don't have modified A opportunities might be able to take advantage of the selection classification process to show that they are physically and mentally ready to play at a higher level. And Mr. Lapani will organize that with anyone who calls and who meets the criterion. So there are chances of that happening, Kath.
Great answer.
Thank
you
very much.
Thank you, Kate. Thanks for the call. Now, Carl and Keith, hang on the line. We'll get you in just a second. But a follow-up to that is we've had listeners asking us this morning, can they help raise money to restore some of these? They want to raise money to restore teaching jobs. They want to raise money to restore field trips. They want to raise money to restore sports. I know you've already heard that. What's the answer?
Well, the hardest one is the one about teachers and staff. There are some real gray areas about fundraising for that that the state pushes back on us very difficultly. So that is probably not possible. Plus, the folks that we've lost, I know, have already entered the job market, and I know they're being
stamped. And I know
up.
You want them to.
I do. I want to make sure that they find a better match. And I tell them, you're only going for a short period of time. We're going to get you back here. So that's a little bit more difficult. The other piece about a contingency budget is let's take modified B, because I think that's where we've had most questions. The problem is you have equity issues and Title IX issues. So the problem for people who want to fundraise for modified B sports is they have a very short period of time, and they've got to raise the total amount.
You can't just pick one sport and put it back.
No. And here's why. The Board of Education has the obligation to accept, modify, or reject any donation. But they know that with modified B sports, it's got to be all or nothing. You can't raise $40,000, do fall sports, and take the chance that fundraising doesn't reach $95,000 and then not do winter or spring. Then you've got an equity and a gender equity issue that's going to cost us much more money in lawsuits. So one of the challenges for folks, especially on the modified B, is, and I'm using August 25th as the date because our first modified B team starts practicing on August 27th, which means we're going to have a doctor there August 26th if they're successful to get the physicals done for those kids. But August 25th, the board has to have the option of accepting, modifying, or rejecting $95,000. That's the problem with raising money for modified B sports.
Can you get there?
Well, I know some of these folks, and
they're very motivated, aren't they?
I know they're motivated, and they want their kids to have these great experiences. I hope they can. I hope that the board is faced with that decision, but it's tough. That's a lot of money in a short period of time.
And let me follow up with that with sort of a there's sort of an unintended consequences here. If they do it, if they get $95,000, and you can restore those sports. Does that send a message to future voters that, hey, if the cuts hurt, we'll figure out a way to restore stuff? Is that something that you would not like to see?
No, the board would make it very clear that this money is, if they decide to accept it, this money is accepted for 1 year and 1 year only based on the position we're in. It is not something that we are going to allow to happen beyond this. We're going to go back to our regular budgeting, and we're going to provide a free and appropriate public education for every single kid as we're supposed to under New York State constitutional law.
But between now and August 25th?
Yeah, that's the date I'm using right
August
now.
August 25th, so it's about a month and a half if you want to see it preserved. It'd be very interesting to see if that money comes in.
Yeah, and field trips are another place where there's some interest.
Yeah, okay. Let's get back to the phones. This is Carl. Thanks for calling Connections. Carl, go ahead.
Hi. I have a question about the tax rates. Just from looking online at the county's website, it looks like West Irondequoit had the second highest school tax in the county. Interestingly, second to East Irondequoit. I mean, is part of it perhaps that the district was living beyond its means? I'll take my answer off the air.
Thanks for the call, Carl. Go ahead, Superintendent.
Hi, Carl. Thank you. That's, in fact, that is one of the outside variables I referred to prior to at the beginning of the hour, really. We have worked diligently to protect the property taxpayer from the burden that Arondequoit taxpayers have. If we were spending above the mean, for instance, in per pupil expenditures, I might have to say, yeah, Carl, we're living above our means. But we spend below the mean of the districts in Monroe County. The mean is $18,004 per student. We spend $17,009 per student. And we went out with the third lowest budget-to-budget increase this year at 1.8% increase. The outside variables are the fact that there are not enough businesses in the West Arondequoit District to offset the burden on the property taxpayer, and that's a variable that hurts us in school district votes. The other outside variables, obviously, the gap elimination adjustment, and in the second half of the Governor Cuomo's promise years ago was tax cap first, mandate relief second, and we've not received any mandate relief, so our expenditures have continued to go up, our revenue has continued to go down, and then this year we had the confusion around the rebates offered to taxpayers for voting no, actually, on school budgets.
Back to the phones. Keith, thanks for calling Connections. Go ahead, Keith.
Supervisor, I'm sorry, I forgot what your first name was.
But, Jeff.
Jeff, I'm from the generation where when I went to school, we had a chalkboard, white and white chalk. High tech was when they brought in yellow chalk and nobody knew what to do. Okay? My generation is...
Did you have to go get glasses at that time?
Well, my generation is... We've survived, all right?
Yep.
Now the kids have whiteboards. They're not any smarter. When I played football, we played on a grass field with some wooden bleachers. Now they have, and I'm talking every school that has football, has a stadium, okay? Swimming pool didn't exist. Most every big school has a swimming pool now. We went for a play. We had cafetoriums. You had an auditorium that you turned the lunch tables around, and they became the auditorium.
I remember.
We had floors that were vinyl asbestos. They were the 9-inch squares. Now kids walk on terrazzo, hand-poured terrazzo floors, not tiles that are machine-made. We're talking hand-poured with little decorations in there that take a week to produce. All right. And your previous guy, if he knew what budgets become during construction without looking at the itemized cost, he would be livid. There would be people with pitchforks and torches at every board meeting when it comes up to vote on a building fund. Now, you may say, well, the state gives you that money. Well, okay, the state gives you the money, but where do they ultimately get it from? They get it from the taxpayers. We have now where you have school districts compete to see who has the most opulent football stadium. AstroTurf.
Keith, at some point I have to let the superintendent respond, so I've got to ask you, go ahead and get to the conclusion here.
Well, I'm sorry, what?
No. I understand your point. I want to make sure that Jeff's got time to respond here. So,
I'm just trying to say, Evan, is it's not just the year-to-year budget. It's the money spent for education, all right? Money spent for education that gets paid out over 20 years, and it gets worse and worse. It gets worse and worse, and it doesn't end. Go take a look at the school that West Arondequoit remodeled and what it cost and what they got. Doesn't make the kids any smarter, but it makes it look really nice. That's what I'm just trying to get across.
Keith, thank you for the call. Superintendent Crane, go ahead.
Keith, I remember some of those. You know, I've been in this business. This is my 40th year, so I remember some of those times as well. Let's talk about the Promise Project that was just passed by 61% on May 20th. That Promise Project is slated to finally fix 3 of about 12 different roofs on Dake with all the renovations and remodeling that enrollment has dictated over the years. It's to put down a new carpet on that field that you talk about because we use it so much. And let me just tell you that I was the superintendent when we took that out to the voters. and the voters approved that purchase and the track, the all-weather track, and we have to maintain those pieces now. But let me tell you that the turf field for West Irondequoit was more of a Title IX issue than a competition with anyone else. When I started as the principal 17 years ago at IHS, I noted something that was troubling to me. All the boys were able to play out back of the high school, and many of the girls were playing their varsity sports down at Pine Grove. And as you know, rules around Title IX, that's something that we had to fix. And because we're landlocked, we had really no other choice but to use the turf, because the turf can stand football cleats and then field hockey cleats without either ball going the wrong way. And more importantly, our physical education classes, some of our physics classes that use the field for their experiments, we've used those fields for education far beyond any competition with any other school. And that's the bottom line for us. Whether I can prove that to you in this answer or not, Keith, I will tell you that those are some of the thoughts that went into the purchase of that. Everything that we try to do is to better assist our kids. And you know the broken window theory. You have one broken window in a school building and you don't fix it real quick, you're going to have 3, 4, or 5 broken windows. And the kids treat their schools the way they find their schools. So it's very important that when they walk up that front sidewalk, that they're proud of that building and they're going to treat it with respect, because then the respect between the adults and the kids and the kids and the adults, everyone can work in a way that is more collaborative. And that's one of the reasons the cost of education has gone up. This is more individualized education, Keith, than you and I received, and it's better education for the kids. And I would disagree with only one thing. If you ever want to join me and walk through a kindergarten class with me in West Irondequoit and see what those kids are doing with our teachers, you will be amazed at the difference in education from when we went through kindergarten. Keith, I invite you to call me in my office.
Jeff Crane is the West Irondequoit superintendent, my guest for the hour here. Mike on Twitter asking for a little clarity. Is the superintendent saying that field trips could also be saved with fundraising?
Well, sure. Field trips, here's the interesting part where the board has some more flexibility. Because our field trips are all education-based, they don't have to wait for the total $55,000 to allow all field trips to occur. So, for instance, outdoor education, which is a tradition for our sixth graders at the end of their sixth grade, is something that there's already been a donation to an interest in donating to that. And because they are education-based, let's say the board said, well, we have the $20,000 we need for Iroquois and Rogers to go to outdoor ed, but that's all we have. Well, because these are education-based and not mandated cuts by the contingency budget, we will allow for it. That's what I mean when the board has the ability to accept, modify, or reject any donation. So there's already movement in that regard.
So you expect at least some field trips will be there then?
I expect the parents who know how important this is for their fifth graders going into sixth to match the donation that's out there.
Let's wrap the hour with an important question. And I know if it sounds flippant, you don't say it flippantly. In the Democrat and Chronicle, you use the word undemocratic, the notion of the tax cap. And were you accurately quoted, and do you feel that way?
I do. I feel strongly that way. I don't in any way hold any one person or legislator or governor responsible for this. But I've heard our legislators say we pass a lot of laws, and one of the most important things we do is we review that which we've done after we've done it to see if there's some consequence that we didn't predict. And for a district, Evan, that for 10 years, our average tax levy for 10 years has been 2.08. That's our average for 10 years. for a district that's doing all the right things. We've taken our reserves and we've spent them down as far as we could to protect the property taxpayer from this. And now we have the comptroller and our external auditor saying you are at the right level with your reserves. If you spend them down any further, you will compromise the fiscal integrity of your district. So I've been told by some of our critics, you ought to listen to the comptroller. Well, we are. And so we are doing all the right things. We have cut our staff, including administrators, across the board by 10 to 12%. We have capped my salary in 2010. I make a good salary, don't get me wrong, but we capped it in 2010 for the entire rest of my career. So if I'm there 8 years or whatever, that's the key.
Your salary's not moving.
My salary's not moving, and that's at my insistence, and the board has agreed that that's a move that we need to do in West Irondequoit. In addition, I donate back every year, and that's something that I've always done. So we're trying to do everything we can to protect the taxpayer, to keep the costs down, but our first constituency, our most important constituency, are the 3,600 kids currently in the West Irondequoit District and the thousands of kids that are going to follow them. I've got to be there for them first.
30 seconds left here. Have you heard from taxpayers or voters who tell you any regret or who hope that you have regret? What have the lessons been? Give me a quick 30-second synopsis that since the non-passage of the supermajority of the second budget, what are you hearing?
Here's the message from the 6,000. Jeff, we can no longer, with our tax rate, cover the expenditures that the state is forcing down to the school level. We've got to figure out another way. We have no choice. The people who voted no, that was the message from them. The silent majority, however, is gaining their voice.
And that's mandates, again. It's a form of
more mandates than anything else.
Thank you for taking the hour and answering all of the questions,
Appreciate
Mr. Superintendent.
Having me on.
Jeff Crane is the superintendent of West Irondequoit. And for our listeners, not everybody returns your phone call as fast as Jeff does. He does it every single time, even in the hard times. And this is maybe the only district in the state in this position. And he said, I'll be there to answer every question you have. And you have to respect that even if you don't want to vote the way he wants you to vote. And we appreciate that, Jeff. Thank you. Thanks to John Andrus, our engineer behind the glass. I'm Evan Dawson. Have a great afternoon and a great weekend. We'll see you on Monday on Member Supported Public Radio.